Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we are back after a bit of a hiatus. After week four, we weren't able to record at all, but there wasn't a whole lot to say after the Bills got shut out by the Packers. The offense was terrible in that game. Wasn't much better this week against the Titans, but hey, the Bills are 2-3, better than we both thought they would be, and, you know, at 2-3 at this stage of the season, with how the AFC is shaping up, the Bills are in contention, and you know that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, if I had told you before the season that I thought the Bills were going to be one game out of the AFC East after five games, what would you have said?
I would have said, "What happened to the other three teams?" And that's probably the answer still.
But it's crazy to me that after that first six quarters we watched this Buffalo Bills team, where watching just the first six quarters, I honestly thought they might have go 0-16. And it's just a whole different, mostly on the defensive side of the ball, it's just been a whole different team. And the defense is why the Bills are winning. And that's kind of how we thought it was going to be when the season started.
Yeah, and we knew there was too much talent on the defensive side of the ball for them to lose, you know, more than 13 games. It was just a lot of people predicting them to go 1-15. Seemed kind of crazy. We saw those first six quarters and we're like, all right, we know they're not this bad. That they're probably somewhere in between, you know, the lights out defense we saw at times last year and just the absolute atrocious performance against Baltimore in the first half against the Chargers. But you know, this is the formula: force turnovers, control the clock on offense, and run the ball 45 times and, you know, hope you score 13 points.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that Bills fans, not only fans, but the coaching staff and management has to kind of reckon with this season is the formula the Bills need to win football games the best thing for Josh Allen's development?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, Nate, because he's not going to learn a whole lot handing the ball off 40 times, I think it was. I think he had, you know, four rushes of his own, so it was probably somewhere around 40 handoffs he had in that game. He's not going to learn how to process defenses, you know, after the ball snapped and go through his progressions when he's handing the ball off. And, you know, that's great. Don't ask him to do too much, but you have to wonder, is he learning anything in games like this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's learning, and every game he's going to be learning something, but if he's not throwing the ball really ever, or if they're not putting him in a position where they're asking him to make some more difficult throws and read the defense, I think it may be harder for him to develop. But at the same time, this is a game, a sport, where the only thing that matters is winning football games. And so that's what makes it, I think tough. And I think McDermott and company realize that. And I think as the season progresses, we'll see Josh Allen being asked to do a few more things, especially as he starts to see some defenses that are less talented. I mean, these defenses, the first five defenses he faced, were pretty good.
Yeah, it's going to definitely get easier the next few games. The Texans have some great defensive players, but as a whole unit, they're not outstanding. And if you just look at it, the Ravens, probably one of the best defenses in the AFC. The Chargers defense isn't great without Joey Bosa, but they're still pretty good. And then, you know, the Vikings are supposed to be one of the best defenses in the league. The Bills, I don't know what happened that game. And then the Packers are better than people give credit for as well. So I think the road definitely gets easier. As we said a couple pods ago, you know, the Bills have a chance to win the next two games and be above 500 all of a sudden. And whether that happens or not, we'll have to see. But if they're able to continue with this formula, force turnovers and keep the other offense off the field, that they've definitely got a chance to be 4-3.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. If you look at how the Bills beat the Titans and how the defensive line just, especially the interior defensive line, just dominated. I mean, you saw a guy the Bills basically came off the street from Miami 2 days before the game, 3 days before the game, and had a really, really good game. I mean, Harrison Phillips and Jordan Phillips, both Phillips interior in the interior line played, had really, really good games. And if they can continue to do that and get even a little bit of pressure, not even have to sack the quarterback. The Bills' secondary and linebacking core is pretty talented, and you saw what they're able to do when they're put in a position where they can make plays.
Yeah, and like you said, both Phillips played well, and I thought Kyle Williams and Star Latulule played well too. So, I mean, you had four defensive tackles play well, and that sounds kind of crazy, but that's how Sean McDermott runs, you know, the personnel. You're never going to see a guy play more than 60, 65% of the snaps. So it's great to see them have some depth at defensive tackle, because that's a position we were worried about coming into the season. And it looks like something they've been able to shore up thanks to the Dolphins. I think it was an overreaction cutting Jordan Phillips after a bit of a sideline outburst during their beatdown they got from the Patriots last week.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be curious to see if he can continue that play, but he's certainly showed what he's capable of, and given that, like you said, McDermott likes to rotate the defensive line, I don't think any of the defensive linemen played more than 65% of the snaps on yesterday. So that is a good thing for the Bills to have, is that much depth across the defensive front.
Yeah, and I thought Shaq Lawson had an outstanding game. It's great to see him finally finding a role. And I know he was a 19 overall pick a few years ago, and he hasn't quite lived up to it as a pass rusher, but he's great against the run, and he forced a fumble in this game as well.
Yeah, he has been a better player than a lot of Bills fans think he's been, because if you look at it, they drafted him as a pass to be a help their pass rush. He has not gotten a lot of sacks, and if you just look at that, you think, oh, maybe he's been a bit of a disappointment, but he does a lot of things pretty well, and I think that's earned him a long-term roster spot in Buffalo. Now he's not going to get paid like a premium pass rusher, and if he wants that money, he probably isn't going to be in Buffalo long-term, but I think he's a player that the Bills do like and can help them in the long run.
Yeah, Nate, do you think it would be fair to say he's more of an edge defender than a pass rusher?
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair to say. And that's honestly how Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott have been using him this season. They've been putting him in situations where he is not just brushing the passer when he's out there. He's being used to set the edge and make plays in the run game. And that's honestly what he's been best at during his time in Buffalo.
Yeah, and the key to any good defense is being able to stop the run consistently. And that's something the Bills have struggled with the last couple of years. And having Shaq Lawson out on, you know, what's the strong side of the offense where they're going to run the ball most of the time, it's great to have a guy that can stop the run on the edge there. And if whoever's playing defensive tackle is playing well, the Bills are going to stop the run all year. And, you know, they only gave up 4 yards per carry on Sunday against the Titans. I think a lot of that was the Titans just inexplicably putting Deion Lewis out there all the time to run the ball between the tackles when you have Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that was an interesting coaching decision that I think the Titans might like to have back. But at the same time, it is hard to say if it would have made that much of a difference, except for probably the fumble. I don't think Derrick Henry would have fumbled that in the situation where Deion Lewis did.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the box score, Henry averaged over 5 yards per carry, Deion Lewis, 2.8. I don't get it. Derrick Henry's the more talented running back when it comes to running the ball between the tackles. Deion Lewis is more of a, you know, type of scat back, catch some passes out of the backfield, take a few carries a game. I really don't get what the Titans are trying to do on offense. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but hey, the Bills defense played well. They forced turnovers and they got the win, and that's all you can ask them to do. They played well, and you can't knock them because the Titans seem somewhat incompetent as a coaching staff.
Yeah, and I've actually thought Mike Vrabel has looked pretty good as a first-time head coach, and then yesterday, I wasn't as sure of his game plan. It's hard, until we see the All-22, it's hard to say whether the Bills maybe took away a lot of things they wanted to do, but just especially that decision in general of not giving the ball to Derrick Henry more often, that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and it looked like a lot of what they were trying to do is hide their quarterback in Marcus Mariota. He's very mistake-prone. And it looked like a few times they were running some run-pass options when Corey Davis was out matched up against Ryan Lewis or Philip Gaines, and Mariota's sitting there handing the ball off instead of just throwing the ball at Corey Davis when he has one of those guys on him. I mean, he was open every time P. Trey White wasn't on him, and I don't get why they weren't just force feeding him the ball.
Yeah, that was another thing that, and that's something I'm curious about from the Bills' perspective too. Is was it intentional that Trey White was not on Corey Davis more often, or was it some miscommunications or lack of communication from Philip Gaines? Because especially once Gaines started getting more snaps, it seemed like he got Corey Davis, the Corey Davis assignment, more, way more than he should have.
Yeah, I mean, Corey Davis was the fifth overall pick, I think, last year. A really good wide receiver, great route runner. He gets six targets in that game. I mean, I get Trey White's kind of a lockdown corner, but it's not like he was facing Trey White every snap. I haven't seen the snap count total of who he's lined up against, but from where we were sitting in the stadium, Nate, it looked like he had probably at least 30 or 40% of his snaps lined up against Gaines or Ryan Lewis. And to only get six targets, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't really make any sense to me. And he, like you said, he was open. There were multiple plays that, from our vantage point in the stadium, it looked like he was open and Mariota just didn't even look his way. Which, that's on Mariota, obviously. And it's just it kind of confusing to me. When you have a wide receiver that's that good, you'd expect your quarterback to just throw the ball at them, even if they're covered, because you expect the great wide receivers to make those plays.
Yeah, so it seemed like both teams kind of had similar game plans. Just run the ball, keep your defense off the field for as long as possible. And yeah, Josh Allen, he didn't play great. I wouldn't say he played awful either. He wasn't asked to do a whole lot. I mean, the box score doesn't look good. 10 of 19 for 82 yards and an interception. That wasn't his fault. I mean, Andre Holmes has to catch that ball. And when he doesn't and the ball's tipped in the air and he just watches the defender go up and grab it, I don't know what he was doing. So I don't think he can knock Josh Allen too much for what he was asked to do in this game.
No, I will say on the interception, Allen, the ball placement wasn't great. Yes, Holmes should have caught it, hit him in the hands. But on that kind of a route, Allen should really be able to hit him in the chest. Because if he throws it at his chest, there is no possible way for anyone other than Andre Holmes to catch the ball.
Yep.
And we throw it above his head like that, that opens up this potential for the tip on the drop to happen and the interception. And so that's the kind of accuracy. When I said before the season, and when they drafted Allen, I was worried about his accuracy. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. I wasn't thinking he's going to like throw the ball 500 yards over someone's head or just miss guys by a mile. It's that kind of accuracy that I think Josh Allen needs to improve upon going forward.
Yeah, and there was one play where I think Zay Jones ran a deep in. I would say it was probably like a 10-yard route or something, maybe 12. It was tough to tell from our spot in the stadium. But Josh Allen stayed in the pocket, stopped shuffling his feet around everywhere, stepped into the throw, and delivered a nice ball to Zay Jones where only Zay Jones could get it down low. And Nate, you and I looked at each other and said, he's so good when he has time, or when he takes the time to set his feet and, you know, square up to his target and deliver the ball. And then you see other times where he's rolling out and he'll throw the ball at a guy's feet when there's no defender around him. And I don't know, there's something mechanically happening there. I'll have to watch the All-22, but when Josh Allen's moving his feet around, something's not right.
Yeah, I mean, on the throw to Kelvin Benjamin, Kelvin Benjamin's only catch of the game is a pretty prime example. He actually made a really nice catch because Josh Allen threw the ball at his feet, and he went down and got it, and that was a play where Josh Allen's feet were moving, and he then throws the ball at Kelvin Benjamin's feet. And so I want to go back and watch that play and the Zay Jones catch in the end, because those are two good examples of when Josh Allen, the good Josh Allen and the bad Josh Allen.
Yeah, and I think it was Jason Kroom also had a really good, an impressive shoestring catch on what looked like just a short drag route on a rollout, and he was able to catch the ball off his shoestrings and then continue up the field to the sideline to get 7 or 8 yards, and you know, he probably shouldn't have even caught the ball. So Josh Allen got bailed out a couple times by his receivers going down low to get the ball, and you know, he has to improve upon that.
Yeah, I think I hope we'll see him asked to do more of those things, so we can hopefully see an improvement from him during the season. Until they ask him to do a bit more, it's going to be hard to really say he's getting a lot or getting any better, really, as the season goes on. Until he's asked him to do more than make 19 throws and never throw the ball more than I mean, other than the first play of the game where he missed the flea flicker, he didn't really throw the ball downfield once after that.
Yeah, and Nate, one of the things we noticed during the Packers game, we didn't get through the pod last week, but he kept turning his back to the defense, and you never want to do that. I don't remember him doing that maybe once at all in this game against the Titans, and it's good to see that mistake corrected, because that's a major concern if he keeps doing that.
Yeah, the only time we noticed that he turned his back was on that really weird reverse play to Ray-Ray McCloud, but that's probably a scenario where that's how the play is being run or supposed to be run. But he did there. He did turn his back, so if there had been a free rusher on that play, he would have gotten clocked. But in passing situations, he did not do it at all when he was bailing out of the pocket or avoiding the rush. And that's a huge improvement from every other game this season.
Yeah, if he can stop seeing ghosts in the pocket, he could be a pretty good quarterback. And I think that's part of him being stuck in Wyoming, where he had no offensive line and no talent around him, and he had to run for his life every play. He tends to bail out of the pocket a lot. There, maybe not so much in this last game, but the first three games of the year. And it cost them, they gave up 8 sacks against the Packers. I think probably 5 or 6 were on Josh Allen just from shuffling his feet around and running away from nothing and running right into a sack. It was good to see him be a bit more patient and a bit more comfortable in the pocket this week.
Yeah, and I think, I would hope that as a rookie gets more experience in the NFL, sees more snaps, they become more comfortable. And that's something I would hope that Josh Allen has that opportunity, or takes advantage of that opportunity as the season goes along.
Yeah, and it's something that's kind of interesting to me, because he's not a guy that's afraid of contact when, you know, he's running the ball as a ball carrier. He almost seeks out contact, and that bothers me a little bit. You don't want your franchise quarterback taking shots like that. But then he seems so scared of it in the pocket. And I think once he gets comfortable with stepping up into a throw and delivering it, you know, as he's about to get hit, he could be really good if he learns how to do that. And, you know, that's something we'll have to watch going forward this year. It's certainly not something you expect a rookie quarterback to be able to do, but those are the little steps of growth that I expect to see, you know, through the second half of the season and into next offseason.
Yeah, and one thing that we have to remember with Josh Allen is he did not take that many snaps in college. He played 2 full seasons. And guys like Baker Mayfield, even Josh Rosen, who played 3 seasons, Baker Mayfield took twice as many snaps in college as Josh Allen did. And Rosen took a full season's worth of almost 1,000 snaps more than Allen in college. Like, that, it makes a big difference. And those guys got a lot more reps before coming to the NFL than Josh Allen did, so it does make a little bit of sense that it might take him some extra snaps in the NFL to get to have the same experience under center as those guys do.
Yeah, so I want to move on to the Bills' running game. It certainly wasn't anything all that impressive. You know, they carried the ball 43 times for 144 yards, just over 3 yards a carry. But it seemed like they got first downs when they needed them, especially Chris Ivory, and that was huge. You know, McCoy got 24 touches on the ground for 85 yards. It wasn't pretty, but it's great to see them finally get LeSean McCoy involved.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And we said that when we were talking before the game, that Shady needs to touch the ball 25 times if they're going to win this game. And he did, and they won the game. I think that's really, I mean, he's your best player, right? And you want your best player to touch the ball as many times as possible. And I think the Bills realized that after he hadn't really been touching the ball a ton the first few weeks of the season. And I hope that going forward they continue to give him that many touches. Maybe not run the ball 43 times or however many times they ran the ball, but make sure your best player has the ball in his hands and the chance to make plays as often as you can.
Yeah, and that's something that's going to be interesting going into next week against the Texans defense, who have some really good, you know, edge rushers and linebackers. It'll be interesting to see how the Bills try to attack that. Calvin Benjamin finally broke 100 yards on the season this week, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, there is one wide receiver on the Bills that is consistently getting open. One. And that's Zay Jones. And if you had asked me last year, at the end of the season, who I thought was going to be, if there was one wide receiver who was going to be consistently getting open, I probably wouldn't have said Zay Jones, but he looks pretty good this year.
Yeah, and it's not something that shows up in the box scores or the stat sheets because he's not getting the ball thrown to him a lot. But against the Packers, there's probably five or six times where he was running wide open across the middle of the field on some drag routes or slant routes, and he just never saw the ball. And I've been impressed with him. He's been lining up in the slot a lot more, which, Nate, you and I have said that's his home. That's where he was really good in college. We didn't understand why the Bills were lining him up outside. But he seems to be doing well and getting open as the slot guy. And I think that's critical going forwards. If they can get a couple of competent wide receivers to complement him, he could really see his production go up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was clear when the Bills drafted him, he has the talent to be a good wide receiver in the NFL. He just needs to be put in a position to succeed. And that's what we're seeing more of this season with him getting those snaps in the slot.
Yeah, and he had a couple really nice plays this week. I mean, he only had three grabs for 20 yards, but the one, I can't remember what type of route it was. It looked like a little fake in on a slant, then a quick out for 6 or 7 yards, and it got a first down in the first half. I think it might have been the first drive of the game to continue the drive. And those are the plays where Zay Jones really excels. And if they just had a number one wide receiver, I think we would be talking about Zay Jones as a guy that's finally blossoming. You know, as a former second-round pick, but instead we're just talking about him as just another guy, really.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that this year, unless the Bills go out and make some splashy trade, they're really not going to have the talent at wide receiver that Josh Allen needs around him to be successful. So it'll be interesting to see if and when they open up their offense more, ask him to make more throws if Zay Jones starts getting 6, 7, 8 catches in a game.
Yeah, so before we wrap up here, just this is our quick, rapid reaction to this week. I do want to talk about how good Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds were. We talked about the defensive line, you know, for a little bit there, but Edmonds and Milano were just terrific again.
Yeah, so this is the first week all season, right, that both Edmonds and Milano never came off the field. And I really hope that that happens much, much more often the rest of the season. It is quite clear that Milano is significantly better than Ramon Humber, and I'm not quite sure why Humber was getting so many snaps the first four games.
Yeah, it was something completely bewildering to me. Milano and Edmonds just play with such high motors. I know that's kind of a cliche term, but those guys are all over the field all the time, and it's great to see the Bills have two good linebackers, because it's been a long time since they've had one good linebacker. I mean, Preston Brown was okay for a few years, but nothing like these two guys that are kind of the next evolution of NFL linebackers, where, you know, they're big, they're fast, and, you know, they can stop the run and they can stop the pass. So it's just great to see them have two young guys that can be the core of the defense for a long time.
Yeah, and that's in today's NFL, most teams, you really only need two good linebackers, because you're in the nickel more often than not because of the passing nature of the NFL. And to be able to have two guys that you really don't ever have to take off the field, that is something that a coach like Sean McDermott must love.
Yeah, and the last guy I want to touch on here, another young guy, and speaking of the nickel, is Teron Johnson. He's been spectacular through five games, and, you know, I think he was a fourth-round pick. He's already outproducing that, you know, that value there. And I've been really impressed with him.
I mean, the interception he made, that's just a great, smart play by a rookie to see the route and be able to jump the route like that. And basically, Mariota ended up throwing the ball right to him.
Yeah, he has great instincts. Very good at recognizing plays. He's good against both the run and the pass, so he's not a liability to have out there. Really at all. It's like having pretty much, I don't know, maybe a smaller safety on the field, because he can stop the run and he can make plays like that and make picks for you too.
Yeah, and the thing that I have been very impressed with him this season, he is a very sure tackler. He does not let guys get, when he has a one-on-one chance to make a tackle, he's making that tackle 95% of the time.
Yeah, so overall, the Bills' defense was just great in this game. you know, you don't need us to tell you that. But when they force turnovers, that's the formula, because they give the offense a short field. They did almost nothing with it. They got maybe 6 points off those turnovers, because I know the first one. No, they did score a touchdown after the first one, I think. So I don't know. It just seems like.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah, so the offense has to do more with what the defense is giving them, because they're not going to force 3 turnovers every game. It's not sustainable. You know, before we started the pod, Nate and I said the same thing last year when they were forcing all those turnovers, you know, against Atlanta. It's like, that's not a sustainable way to win when you're not getting pressure with 4. But, you know, we'll see if they can continue that, because the defensive line is playing well. Nate, we will continue with the Chris Ivory Award winner. I don't even think we need to see the All 22 this week. It's going to Corey Bohorquez.
I really want to know what happened, because the Bills, they didn't really tell us. They just said it's a miscommunication. But I don't understand how, if you have a fake on, there should be no question what's going on. Like, every player should know 100%, is it a fake or is it not a fake? So I really want to know what the heck happened there.
Yeah. I mean, reminder, if you haven't listened to us before, or if you just need to remember refresh, the Chris Ivory Award is something we give each week to a guy that just gets completely embarrassed by something on the field. Corey Bohorquez thinking that it was a fake field goal, and the other 10 guys looking at him like, what the hell are you doing? And then him apparently like tearing his rotator cuff trying to throw the ball. just a mess.
I will give him a lot of credit for A, being able to continue the rest of the game and hold that last field goal and be able to punt the ball with his shoulder, because it was clear he was in pain. And so I do give him some credit for that, but it's still hilarious. And we do have to consider that he has been one of the best punters in the NFL this season. So he has made 2 really stupid mistakes, 2 dumb rookie mistakes, but he's been one of the better punters in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to laugh at the guy's pain, but it is kind of, it's a humorous circumstances that a punter hurts his shoulder trying to throw a ball because he thought there was a fake on and there wasn't. It's just something that seems like only happens in Buffalo and Cleveland.
Yep, and speaking of those 2 teams, I was going to ask you, there are 3 teams in the NFL that have punted 30 or more times this season. Can you name the 3 teams?
Well, I'm guessing one's Buffalo.
Buffalo, yes.
I haven't watched many Oakland games, but I feel like they've been terrible, so I'm going to go Oakland and then Arizona.
So you got 2 of I thought you were going to get them all, because I kind of gave it away. I said, speaking of Buffalo and Cleveland, Cleveland has the most punts by far, and then Buffalo and Arizona are next. You have to remember Cleveland has played, 3 overtime games this season?
See, I should have put 2 and 2 together there.
But, yeah, so that they've played like an extra 25 minutes of football or something like that, but yes, so that's you've been Cleveland and Buffalo for the last 15 years. The punters are some of the best players on the team.
But the Bills have the same record as the defending champion Eagles, and the Browns have a better record than the Eagles through 5 weeks, so I don't know how you want to explain that. I chalk it up to just football.
The NFL has some interesting things happen every single season, and I mean this year is absolutely no different, and that's why I am always excited to see how the rest of this NFL season is going to go. I mean, there's one team in the league that's like, I guess one team in each conference. I mean, that is like, okay, these guys are really, really good. Beyond that, it's kind of who knows so far. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, and even then, the Chiefs started last year 5-0 and disappeared off the face of the earth. I mean, Alex Smith was an MVP candidate through 5 weeks. Granted, I think Pat Mahomes might be a bit better, but I don't know. We never know anything for certain in the NFL, except that the Patriots are good and they'll be there in the postseason. So,
yeah. Oh man. So I think that will bring us to the end of our post-game Bills Titans podcast. And remember, we will once we get to All 22, we will come back and do a more in-depth breakdown of what we saw in this game.
Absolutely. So we'll look forward to bringing that to you guys later this week, along with a preview of week six against the Texans. I'm your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts so you can help others find it and give it a listen. We appreciate you listening as always. You can follow us along on Twitter at @Bills_breakdown, Facebook at @Bills_breakdown, and you can reach us with any feedback, comments, anything at those places, or BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.